Former Cubs manager Joe Maddon on MLB Network earlier today giving his path for the Guardians to overcome the Yankees as we are now inside an hour 15 away from first pitch of Game 3 of the ALCS, and we got the butterflies rumbling there, buddy.
I heard that entire quote, and I was just sitting there thinking, like, isn't that what Steven Vogt's already doing?
Like, making the right decisions.
Well, yeah, but we just spent a whole segment talking about how, hey, he's got to be aggressive. He's just got to be aggressive at the right times and pull the right strings. I know Joe Maddon's a World Series champion at the expense of Cleveland, unfortunately.
I don't want to talk about that.
But it just felt like, tell me something I don't know, I guess, from Joe Maddon. Like, well, it's easy for him to sit there after he's been fired a couple times and be like, ah, hey, here's what I would do.
Why are you jamming Joe Maddon up?
Because, I just think that's what Steven Vogt's already been doing. Like, I don't think he is going into this series, like, trying to win by the normal means, because I think I think he's been doing that all year. He understands where his team's at. He doesn't have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. He can't just go up and hack at the ball and hope to hit it out. So I think he tries different things. You're right. Sometimes it doesn't work. But if we look back on the series and he made some mistakes trying to be aggressive, I think what Joe Maddon's alluding to is if they go down swinging that way in the style that he's played all year, then I can live with that.
So I actually think, because we also have another piece of audio where Joe Maddon said he needs to stay aggressive. So I actually think this was kind of building upon that, because I do think you have two separate problems right now. And I think these are, like, we can talk about the pitching staff. We know the margin for error in the pitching staff. That's not a new thing. They've been piecemealing the starting rotation and leaning, just overly leaning on the on the bullpen all season long. But what I think the two separate problems are, there is, if you're going to be aggressive, getting them right, which you talked about in the last segment, I think what Joe Maddon's saying is, I think he's talking more about the bats. Because I do think the bats have it in their head, and this has been a problem. This has been like a 24-hour bug that they keep coming back to, this idea of, hey, I got to try and hit a 5-run home run when it's just me at the plate and nobody on base. That is something it damn near got them sunk in the Tiger series. It certainly got them sunk in August. It hurt them at the end of July. It's as if they've gotten, I'd say, 83% of the bad habits out that they really developed from July to kind of the beginning of September. But those last remaining 17% of bad habits are, you have to overcome them now. Tonight's that game where if you get three, two men on and there's one man out, get a run. Like, listen, if you get a fastball groove to you, smoke that thing.
Yeah,
but don't worry about it.
What happened to Fry with the pinch hit?
Exactly.
He got a fastball, which I said at the time, like, he I think he needed to extend that at bat a little bit and try to work the pitch count, because the Garrett Cole did not have his best stuff the other night. I mean, and I've said that. You want to talk about the lights being too bright? That is a guy who, whenever he's on this stage, usually is susceptible to mistakes. And so, yeah, like, I wanted to see him work the count a little bit there, and he didn't. But I understood why he swung. So, yeah, I understand what he's saying. Like, being aggressive, the batter's got to do that. But it has to be aggressive in a way where you're trying to manufacture runs, not being aggressive in a way where it's like you're just swinging for the fences, which is what Josh Naylor's basically been doing for 2+ series now.
So, I do think tonight, like, just swing smart, right? If you get a fastball, take a fastball. I mean, again, that is how David Fry Lane Thomas did a number on Tarik Skubal. So, like, yeah. This game's gettable. And I do think, like, I think getting back to how, because, like, even tonight, Daniel Schneeman's in the lineup. And I've heard everyone, you're not wrong to say, oh, that's our sixth hitter tonight. You wanted to see Will Brennan again? John Kensi, who I believe has struck out 75 times in 12 at-bats.
Is that bad?
It's not good. It's not good. And you don't have the lefty matchup. Like, as long as the lefty's on the mound, I'm content with giving John Kensi that opportunity. But specific to tonight, if it is between Will Brennan or Daniel Schneeman, well, we haven't tried the Schneeman thing. I don't love this idea of putting a guy who's been cold and really hasn't played at all. I would have preferred, now in hindsight, Angel Martinez being out there. But I think Joe Maddon's spot on. I think swing, like, just get back to being disciplined and understanding you're not going to beat the Yankees. If both teams have three home runs, you're still probably losing this game.
So I also think this, like, I was just thinking about this as you were talking a little bit, and you brought up Tarik Skubal. They clearly, I mean, I know it took a little bit in that second outing to get to Skubal. And obviously the Lane Thomas pitch, like he changes the game, the entire complexion of the game with one swing versus like if he could have worked out of the jam, got a ground ball, maybe things go differently. But it looked like in game five, they were picking up what Skubal wanted to do a little bit better. And so that's why, like, we talk about extending the series versus winning the series. You like it starts with the mentality of like let's get a game and then see where we're at. But I because of how they played against Skubal in that second game, that second time around, like seeing him for the second time in a 6-game span or a 6-day span, I think that helped immensely for them being able to kind of track things better. And so you talk about like having hope that they can still win this thing. That's maybe one of the biggest reasons I have hope for them. Is if they can get back to Rodon and get back to Cole, and you've pushed the series to that point, and now the pressure is even more on the Yankees to hold you off and not blow some big series lead, a 2-0 series lead. Like, think about the damage they can do against those guys a second time around, seeing them within a week's time. Like, so yeah, I if they can just get back to the basics, they don't need, I know it's hard because you're playing the Yankees, and maybe that's where like the bright lights thing comes into play. Maybe on that stage in the Bronx in New York, you're like, we have to outslug this team if we're going to win. And so you're swinging a bad pitch and you're doing uncharacteristic things. Back at home, the comfortability factor is there. Just go out and play your style in front of a crowd that's going to support you every step of the way. And know that like if you get one, sometimes that can mean multiple at a time. And just win the way that you're accustomed to winning and then see where this thing goes from here. Because again, I think you get back to those top two guys in the rotation against for the Yankees, I like their chances to have them figure it out the second time around a little bit better.
Well, I just keep coming back to extending this series. Before we can talk about winning this series, it's about extending this series. And I think was a point you were going for earlier. But I do think, like, it's been wild watching the Guardians in the postseason because I feel like it's been the push and pull the last two seasons, right? And when I say the last two seasons, I mean the two seasons before this. The thing that sunk them last year was they tried to win every game with one swing of the bat. And they weren't good enough to because Tito didn't want them swinging that way.
Yeah.
And so this year, the entirety of the regular season was those two kind of theorems, the kind of, you know, crashing against each other at any given point. You don't beat the Yankees in one. You don't win this series in one game. You win one game in one game. You don't win it one at bat. And the series is here. And I think, you know, I here's why to me it's important. I don't want the narrative on this to be, hey, you just never showed up to the ALCS. I don't want it for them. They've worked so hard, and I know they care. And yes, Josh Naylor over swinging annoys the hell out of me. And yes,
am I cynical for thinking that sounds like something you'd say to like one of your daughters if they came home? Like, I know you worked so hard. Oh, you're trying your best. Just
you have no idea the things I've said about Josh Naylor in the confines of my own home. And I said I didn't know my kids were in the room. My twins were in the room. Olivia's older. She's 14. She's heard everything
I said. The twins love when you swear, don't they?
They do, but that doesn't mean I love when they hear me swear. And when Josh Naylor struck out in game two, I called him. I mean, I went heavy on Josh Naylor because it was just me and the TV. I didn't even know Vanessa was in the room. The dog was hiding.
Blacked out.
I body shamed him. I mean, guys, so it's not bringing out the best.
You joined that that cult, huh?
But that cult?
That was the wrong word.
Okay, that's fine.
That crowd.
But
sorry.
I don't have time to explore whatever we're going to go here. But I do think, like, I would hate it for them if the conversation we have is, you didn't show up. Losing is fine. Like, I'm proud of this team. I really am. And I'm so excited for them to have an opportunity to answer for that losing. But, man, show up.
So
play
what
smart.
Showing
play
up
your
look
game.
Like?
If you're going to lose your way.
What does showing up look like? Is it they gotta get at least two games and go six? Like, what is it? What will – if this series – like, obviously, I'm assuming if they lose in four, you'd be like, they didn't show up.
Well, no. Showing up is – You played the game your way.
So no matter
and you
how
beat
they
yourself.
Lose, if they lose in four, it's okay as long as the next two games they like play their style of baseball, make it interesting.
I'm on an island on that one. I guarantee you, no one's going to say getting swept by the Yankees in the ALCS. But I want you to have a chance to win, and to have a chance to win, you got to play guard ball, right, or whatever the hell we're calling it now, Guardians ball. It's good.
Very Kevin Stefanski of you.
Corey Kluber, next on 92.3 The Fan. Wilson, Spencer, German back on Afternoon Drive. Obviously, we spent a lot of the show today talking about Game 3 of the ALCS. Guardians, Yankees coming up here in a short bit here in downtown Cleveland. Be really nice to get the win, but we actually have a guy on the line right now that has some pretty in-depth experience in moments like this, and I can't wait to pick his brain. He's retired now, but he'll never be retired in our hearts. The great Corey Kluber joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, and of course, you guys can check out his podcast, Casa de Klubs, wherever you get it. So we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome on former Cleveland Indians pitcher, former ace, former Cy Young winner, now hosting his own podcast, Casa de Klubs, which I've watched way too much of on TikTok alone. Corey Kluber joins us. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I gotta say, I didn't know you could talk this well, dude. You're really good at the whole podcasting thing. Did you have any idea at how? Because honestly, you just seem so damn easygoing and easy to talk to and open in that forum. Did you have any idea that you would have this kind of talent?
I definitely don't think it was what I thought I'd be doing after baseball. But, you know, I think that I would compare it a lot to kind of having conversations in a locker room, which is probably a much more comfortable setting for me than, you know, sitting up at a podium and with a microphone in front of me, in front of, you know, however many people asking me questions type deal. So I think that's maybe why it maybe feels a little more natural to me.
So what for you has been, you know, like, is this about staying in the game? Is it about just another avenue? What about it really brought you to the table and made it something that was interesting and palatable for you?
Yeah, there's probably definitely an element of that there. You know, I didn't retire because I didn't like baseball anymore. It's just something that I didn't think I was capable of doing to the level that I expected of myself anymore. You know, that sort of thing. So I think finding a way to be able to stay involved and, you know, kind of fill a little bit of that void has been nice for me. But I also think that just from my experiences, from my feelings, from conversations I've had with plenty of people throughout my career, you know, I thought that a lot of guys have interesting stories. They have things to say, experiences they've come across that I thought maybe a lot of people might not necessarily be aware of and would find really interesting. And this seemed like a good avenue to kind of give guys the floor and let them tell their story.
Well, like I said, I think you're doing an awesome job at it. And, you know, I'm certainly not trying to be condescending in any way, that I'm just so surprised at just how natural you are and how much fun. You know, the Greg Maddux clip, I think I've watched about four times now. You're talking about Greg Maddux and, you know, all these, you know, I'm helping the viral quotient of this. But just in, you know, big picture, you know, last year was your last year. You were in Boston last, you know, you pitched out of the pen there. In terms of retirement, I mean, you got Casa de Klubs, but how is that adjustment to retirement going?
I'd say it's been overall smooth. You know, I'd be lying if I said there wasn't days where I missed the routine of a season, or, you know, miss, like we talked about with the show, kind of missed the interactions in the clubhouse on a day-to-day basis. You know, I probably went through a period of time initially, especially when I didn't really have much of an idea or of much direction of what I was going to be doing to kind of fill the days besides driving kids to school, where, you know, things could feel pretty boring at times. But I think I've learned to find different ways to kind of correct that, the show being one of them. And so, yeah, I think I'm trying to get into a sort of new groove in a different stage of life.
Well, you know, I don't. The Guardians are a pitcher short right now. I know you say you're retired, but can I get like four innings out of you, maybe in like a game four situation tomorrow? Not sure if you're in the Cleveland area.
I think I'm still recovering from the three pitch that I threw for the Savannah Bananas two months ago. So not sure they want me getting anywhere near that mound.
Corey Kluber, Casa de Klubs. If you guys haven't listened to the podcast, it is a lot of fun. And a lot of great inside stories in baseball. Not just inside stories, but kind of, you know, getting a different kind of perspective here. Former Guardians, former Cleveland pitcher, Corey Kluber on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So let's bring it to right now. The Guardians down 2-0. One theory out there is the lights are too bright for the Cleveland Guardians in this series. Do you think that's what's going on? Do you think that's part of the struggles for the Guardians so far?
You know, I haven't watched every pitch of the first two games. I've paid attention to the first two games, and that's not really how I would categorize it. You know, I think it's the margins, especially when you get down to the final four teams, the margins between wins and losses aren't all that big more often than not. I guess the other series, they probably have been pretty big with three blowouts, but you know, relatively speaking, I feel like they've been two pretty close games thus far, and I think that aside from maybe beating themselves, so to speak, a little bit with walks and maybe some defensive miscues, it really hasn't been, in my mind, you know, too much out of hand so far. So I wouldn't say the lights are too bright. I think it's just a matter of probably cleaning up those things a little bit, which I think is what they would say their style of baseball is playing a good, clean game and, you know, getting a lead over their bullpen. That's probably still the same recipe for success, no matter what the score of the series is.
So when you're down 0-2 in a series, or when you're down in a series, what are the things that have to happen to just make this feel? Because I'll be honest with you, I was telling people off the ledge after Tuesday night saying, guys, they're just down 2-0. Yeah, it hasn't gone the way you wanted it to, but you're coming home. You still have every opportunity. And the deluge of the series is over and the sky is falling and, you know, bleep the Dolans. We don't have to keep that one. But, like, the amount of panic that comes from that, like, what are the Guardians up against being down 0-2 in this series?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's the guys in that clubhouse not getting caught up in outside noise. You know, you don't get to this point without being a confident group and believing in yourselves. And, you know, if that starts to waver, that makes the task a lot harder than what it actually is. But it sounds cliche, but it's really just, it's doing the little things and, you know, winning each at bat, winning each inning, and that turns into a couple innings and that turns into a game. And then next thing you know, you're right back in the series. And, you know, I think in the playoffs, especially, momentum's a big thing. Unfortunately, I've been on the wrong side of that momentum getting out of hand, and you know, it's hard to correct it. So it doesn't take much, I feel like, to kind of sway the momentum of a series.
Corey Kluber on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Now with this podcast, Casa de Klub. So Matthew Boyd right now, he is, you know, they signed him, I believe, in early July. It's a guy coming off Tommy John surgery and all of a sudden became one of your most important pitchers. He has given you chances in each one of the games that he started in. But what's going through the mind of Matthew Boyd as he's prepping for what he might feel like, and certainly Guardians fans probably feel like, is the most important start of his career?
I mean, any human's aware of the circumstances. You know, anybody would be lying to you if they told you they weren't. I think that the big task at hand, so to speak, I think, in my opinion, when you're in that spot, is not trying to, even though there's a sense of it being more important, not trying to do more than you're capable of or more than you're accustomed to while you're out there on the mound. You know, it still comes down to executing pitches. It still comes down to changing speed, keeping guys off balance, all those same things. That stuff applies whether it's October or whether it's June. You know, I think that if I had to imagine, Stephen Boat's going to be pretty aggressive and try to utilize that bullpen the first chance he gets, especially if they can get a lead. So I think it's just trying to hold the offense at bay as long as you're out there, and then hand it over to those guys.
Corey, I'm pretty sure I've interviewed you one or two times previously, but I'm even more sure that I've never asked you this question. Did you like the nickname Klubot?
I was indifferent about it. I don't think that I disliked it as much as maybe some people thought, and I don't think that it was my favorite thing in the world, but I think it's just, there's a nickname that somebody gave me, and it is what it is.
Well, I was asking you because, you know, that kind of, for some people, I think it summed up who they felt like you were watching you pitch, your steely demeanor. And, you know, then you go to Jose Ramirez, your former teammate, and everybody calls him Hosey. And it's funny because that's another name that encapsulates, well, like, just like, I don't even know how to describe it, how people see Hosey as a player and his personality. Why is Jose, like, what makes him capable of doing what he does year in, year out, being, 30 threat every year and a 6 WAR player every year?
I mean, in the simplest terms I could tell you, he's just an extremely talented player with a good work ethic, always trying to improve. You know, you put all those things together and that's what you get. You know, I think we're, I actually really liked what Booney said the other day when he was asked about it. I saw his answer about, you know, for people within baseball, Jose Ramirez is not underrated at all. And I think everybody's well aware of how good he is. All the things he said, the perennial all-star, the doing things that very few people in the history of baseball have done before. You know, and I think, like I said, it just comes back to, number one, having a lot of talent, and then number two, working to hone your craft and always looking for ways to get better and improve.
Corey, I think the first time I became aware of Casa de Clubes was the Baker Mayfield clip where he talked about, you know, the idea of winning a Browns Super Bowl and how big that would be, and how big just Cleveland winning another championship would be. And I'm just curious, as a guy who, you guys were so close in 2016, you know, we're almost a decade removed from that, if you can believe that. But what do you think a World Series win would mean for the Guardians organization, for Cleveland fans, and for the state of baseball in Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was in Cleveland when, you know, the Cavs won, and just knowing how passionate of a sports town it is, witnessing what that meant to the fans, to the people of Cleveland. I think that, you know, whether it was another NBA Finals or a World Series or a Super Bowl, I think that it would mean a lot to the city, a lot to the people, and it would reward that enthusiasm regardless of it. I think that obviously the baseball team having one of the longer droughts in Major League Baseball maybe puts it under a little bit bigger microscope, but I think that the sports fans in general in Cleveland are and probably always will be hungry for the next championship.
Does 2016 still sting for you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, anybody that plays wants to be the last team standing at the end of the year and win a World Series, and that was the closest that I came to doing that, and unfortunately weren't quite able to get across the finish line. But at the same time, I think, you know, if you take a step back and look at kind of what we encountered to get to that point, you know, the way that we got to being one game away, no doubt it stings, but I think it's also something that we can all be proud of.
I definitely think so, though I'll be honest with you, and I want your take on this. Every time I see Bill Murray or Eddie Vedder, I think that of them celebrating on Cleveland's field, and it still kind of pisses me off.
I just try not to watch any clips of that game anymore.
Yeah, I was at the library yesterday, and they have a book. Tom Verducci wrote a book about the 2016 Chicago Cubs. And I picked it up because I was like, oh, I'll learn things about, you know, one of my five favorite teams ever, the 2016 Guardians. And I read like one part of the chapter on that World Series and got mad and put it down and just walked away. I don't think I got anything from the library. That's how pissed off it was. And I'll be honest with you, I really love Bill Murray and Eddie Vedder. And I still have to kind of compartmentalize that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably that passion that we were just talking about with Cleveland and their fans and their sports and stuff. You know, whether it's that heartbreak or a different heartbreak in the city's history with sports, I think that, you know, those moments are probably hard to ever erase.
Corey, really good stuff, man. I really want to continue to encourage you on Casa de Clubes. I think that is something I think Guards fans are going to love. I think you're pretty darn good at it and pretty natural at it. So we appreciate your time, man. We wish you the best of luck here. Hopefully, the next time we talk to you, maybe the Guardians are either back in this series, have won a World Series. But regardless, best of luck to you and the fam.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Former Cleveland pitcher Corey Kluber on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Great stuff with him. We'll react to what he had to say. Also, we continue to get us ready for Game 3, including talking about the Matthew Boyd effect on 92.3 The Fan. Back on Afternoon Drive, Nick Wilson, Spencer German with you. We do have Daryl Ryder coming up in just about 40 minutes here, as we're going to have him on. Of course, he was all over the story about the Browns' decision to move forward with the Brook Park Dome project.
Darryl should have made a burger bet with you about when this news was going to come, and then maybe he could have got a burger back.
It would be the worst burger bet because I would never make it.
Because he had inside information?
Well, no, because I would never make the burger bet off that. Because everybody knew that this was going to happen.
But if he had given you like the specific date, though, that would have been the thing that you would have had to bet on. When is it going to come down?
All right, so I'll be honest with you. I don't think the story was coming out until tomorrow at the earliest.
So my point, you want to win another burger?
I think a certain mayor of a certain city, maybe named Justin Bibb, tried to go ahead and push up the press conference to get out ahead of it. Which, by the way, also upstaged the Cleveland Guardians Game 3 of the ALCS. Thanks, Justin. We love your
politics
here.
Tomorrow would have been the better day because you could have just Friday news dumped it.
Why would you Friday news dump? Are you talking about from Bibb's standpoint?
Bibb's standpoint, yeah.
Because I will say this. One of the things I didn't understand is why the Browns would announce it tomorrow, because it's like this should be...
They should announce it at kickoff on Sunday.
Actually, if you really want to get real with it...
Not kickoff. End of the third quarter.
No. Don't let the game taint the news. Wait until the game is over, and then at like
when the final
five
buzzer
on
sounds,
Sunday.
Kevin Stefanski just comes out to his press conference, and he's like, "Guys, before we get into the game, I have to tell you, we are moving to Brook Park. Questions?" And then everyone's just asking about Brook Park instead.
Yeah, I mean, you could just do that with anything, though. Can we draw this out? Like, hey, guys, we're not going to be on the lakefront next week. 4:30, you're going to hear where we're going to go. And you just draw
it out.
It's like
a slow game. They just unveil things in pieces.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we actually won today. We did not expect that to happen. So
we'll tell you next week. So yeah. And see if you can get all 18 weeks out of it.
But the new stadium is planned to open up in 2029. Of course, that has to happen on time because the current Browns lease expires in 2028. In this one began all the way back in 2017. Meanwhile, Mayor Justin Bibb has said he remains open to continuing dialogue with the Haslams on the idea of remaining in Cleveland, which feels like after a divorce being like, hey, I'm willing to get back together. Like, yeah, sure, the judge signed off, but I mean, I'd do it. Okay, stop telling your kids that.
Can we continue dialogue with whether or not we wanted to trade for Deshaun Watson? Like, can we revisit that with the Texans? Like, hey, you know, can we just maybe revisit this conversation and rethink how we want to go about this?
I don't think we can.
That's a bummer.
Daryl's going to join us in about 30 minutes here now to go ahead and talk about that. But we just had Corey Kluber on talking about the Guardians here and... You know, whether it's the lights too bright thing, any of the things that we're talking about with this game, I do think winning tonight goes a long way in the way people perceive this series. If you don't win this series, if you get swept out of this series, it's going to turn into an indictment on the Guardians organization. It shouldn't, right? This is still a wildly successful series, no matter whether it goes six games and you lose or four games. But I think when we start talking about like the immediate ramifications of tonight's game, it's at home. It's incredibly winnable. You've got probably your second best starter on the bump tonight. And now it's about, you know, until you really get back in this series, which means pulling it even, I think it's about how can we make it look a little bit nicer? Because I just would hate if we became overtly negative about a season that, quite honestly, has been an incredible amount of fun.
I don't want to see the season become like a negative thing, and we look back and we're not happy with the way that this has gone. Because I do think, given where the projections were, I mean, this team was picked to be like around 500, if that. This season not disappointed in any way, shape, or form, no matter how this series goes the rest of the way. I do think, though, like, on some level, I'm okay with fans feeling like the pressure's on the organization a little bit, where it's like, this is why you don't waste these opportunities. And again, this isn't me trying to go back to the trade deadline thing and like rehash all that. I understand the market was the market. I still think there was deals you could have made, at least for starting pitching, that could have been done to help.
Like which ones?
I mean, I rattled off four pitchers last night that had pretty good second halves that you could have used in this game. Eric Fetty was one, or in this series. Flaherty was one who went to the Dodgers and has had a good series. Zach Eflin had a really good September for Baltimore. So I again, I'm not trying to make that about that specifically, but
so
you're
trying to do the same thing. I was hoping we didn't do.
What I'm saying, you asked me what names, so I gave you some names. No, my larger point though in this is like, now you've seen, like, I want it to be a lesson for like the future more so. Like, okay, yeah, you got there. We feel really good about things, but like, now you set the bar to another level. Now you've gotten to the ALCS. The expectations are going to be you take another step. So how are you going to in the offseason? Because they did nothing in the offseason before the season as well. And look at the results. So now if you actually go bolster this roster and add some of the things that you need, maybe that's the thing that takes you to the next level. Like, just I just want this to be whatever happens from here. Unless it ends with them winning the World Series, of course. But if they lose this series in four, they lose this series in seven, if they lose in the World Series, I want it to be about like, okay, we now know like we have to do more to get this team to that next level. We're only going to get so far. I want that to kind of be the thing. So I'm not saying it has to be a negative. I just hope it's like we can look back fondly on the season and realize you don't waste these opportunities. You got to take advantage of the situation they're in when you still have guys that are on arbitration, Stephen Kwan, others, maybe Josh Naylor. If he's back next year, it's the last year for him. How are you going to supplement this chance you have to still make a run with this roster before a guy like Jose gets too old and he can't do it and he can't be your star player anymore?
I mean, they traded for two players and signed another one. So, I mean, and that's just to big picture here. I think the problem is, and we don't do this with any other team in town, anytime they have success and then it doesn't go to the ultimate level of success, it's turned around on the Guardians. And I just think that's what, like, do you think that they don't know that they could do a better job of, like, I think it's, I don't think it's like the front office doesn't want to. I think the front office has to live in realities of trying to maintain competitiveness. That, like, that's an ownership thing. So I don't think the Dolans are going to wake up and suddenly be like, hey, should we sign Juan Soto with a 10-year, $500 million deal?
We've seen him do it before, though. 2016, they went out, and then they signed Edwin Encarnacion,
who was like a middle-of-the-road free agent. I mean, $20 million was a high-water mark for them, but not necessarily for everybody else. I guess my bigger point is, it's not that those things aren't logical or that those things aren't understandable. It is... like, I don't think we should feel any sort of shame or anger or anything if this thing just doesn't go your way.
No, I don't think it should be an indictment on the season as a whole. I just think it should be like, okay, now you've seen them get to the ALDS with this core of players. You've seen them get to the ALCS now with this core of players. What is it going to take that next step? And I just hope that it encourages in some way, and maybe this is just wishful thinking, that Paul Dolan does want to invest in the team more like he did after 2016. Because I do think, like, this team has the chance to do that, but you're seeing in real time what you need to kind of get to that finish line. And I just want it to be a lesson for them, I guess.
I think the lesson is going to be they just lost $45 million in TV money per year. I think that's going to be the bigger lesson the bigger reality.
It's going to make things difficult, for
which will make this feel like a one that got away if it does get away from you. We've got more on the Guardians there. Where are you on tonight's game? And getting back into it, I think you and I both agree. Four innings from Matthew Boyd would go a very long way. The 5 at 5 next on 92.3 The Fan.